So technology is the topic between now and three. And if you've got a point or a question about technology, then do call in. And I'm joined on the line by Fevzi Turkalp, the editor of GadgetDetective.com, host of the Gadget Detective podcast. Morning, Fevzi.
Good morning to you, sir.
So I'd like to ask you first of all about this public emergency alert that was announced at midnight. There's going to be a test in a few weeks' time. How's it going to work? What's the point of it?
Well, first of all, the test is next month, Sunday, the 23rd of April. It'll be sometime in the evening. How it will appear is that we will receive a message that will pop up on our screens of our mobile devices. We will not be able to do anything else with our phones until we at least acknowledge that we've seen the message. It will make the phone buzz and ring, even if you've set it to silent. It'll override that. And they think that they can get to about 90% of mobile phone users within a particular area. And the way it works is that it basically broadcasts from a group of cells. So you can just say, in this area, I want everyone's phone to go off. They don't have to know your number. They don't even have to geolocate you. You just have to be within the reception area, and they do this sort of cell broadcast, and everyone within that area gets it. So it can be quite useful. It can be used for, initially, I think it will be used for extreme weather, but eventually things like terror alerts will be added in.
So it would come up on everybody's mobile phone. Well, 90%, you say. So would it work on like Nick has got one of his the old Nokia? He's not a smartphone, it's just an ordinary old Nokia. Would that work?
I think it will do. Yeah, I think a message should still come up on most phones, because they're saying it's not, you don't have to download an app, for example. It should just work, and it will work for those people who are within the area which they wish to broadcast to. And I think that's one of the strengths of the system, is that they can actually hone it. So sometimes weather, floods, you know, car crashes and so forth can be in quite localized areas, and therefore the ability to message those particular people is quite important. I think it could save lives.
And you said that it could be able to disable the phone until you acknowledge it. How would that work?
Well, it's just that you can't do anything else until you said, yeah, okay, I've seen that. It won't let you proceed off that screen. Okay. And the reason for that being that you shouldn't just, you know, tap past it by accident, not realising what it is.
Right. So is that technology that is built into a smartphone that they have got agreement to use then? Because presumably other people can't do that with your mobile phone.
Well, yeah, that's right. So this should be limited. That's a very good point, actually. This should be limited to the government, and emergency services should have access to this. One possible concern is that if, you know, someone tries to spoof these messages, make it appear that, you know, they are the government or the emergency services and get you to act in a particular way, you can actually cross-check if the message you're seeing on your screen is genuine. If you go to the gov.uk/alerts page, you can actually find a list of all current alerts, so you can do a cross-check if you're in a position to do so. If you've got internet access, you can do that. But, yeah, I mean, obviously this system could be wildly abused, couldn't it?
It could. I hadn't thought of that. I mean, it's absolutely could be rife with scams, couldn't it?
Well, I remember that there was a terrorist bomb in central London going back some time, and the people who set the bomb gave a false warning and corralled the people towards the bomb instead of away from it. And actually, you know, something like that could happen. So there have to be... They better be sure that this is a secure system, is all I can say. And the government hasn't got the best track record on having secure computer systems.
Interesting. Well, we've got some questions coming in from people on this. Let's go to Steve in Basildon. Hello, Steve.
Oh, morning, Clive.
Morning.
Morning.
Hi.
Morning. Like many people, I'm one of the people that only have a dumb phone and not a smartphone. And I was just wondering, if you don't have internet access, how would you be able to respond to this message and therefore continue to use your phone?
Right. They haven't been very clear about exactly which phones will get the message. They've said that the ability to send a message to 90% of mobile users, and I think more than 90% are smartphone users now, most likely. You don't need to have internet access for this to work, because it's a broadcast from the cell network. So just as as long as you're within the range of one of the towers that's transmitting, you will get the message. Whether you get it if you haven't got a smartphone actually is not made clear. I guess we will find out on Sunday the 23rd when they test it.
So, I mean, if you do get the message on a non-smartphone, would you still be able to perhaps respond to it by text or something like that rather than clicking on a link?
Yeah, you don't actually need to respond to it. They don't know that you're acknowledging that you've seen it. It's just that you won't be able to get it off your screen until you hit OK, I've seen it, you know, something like that, just the OK button. So it's not that they're waiting for you to respond. It's just that what they want to do is make sure that you don't inadvertently tap past it and go to another app or do something
different. So it'd be like press one or click OK or something to say that you've read it.
Yeah, acknowledge or OK, something like that, I would imagine. Yeah.
OK, and I understand from the news bulletins that there's a way that you can change your phone settings to opt out as well.
Yeah, so they are giving people the ability to opt out, which is interesting. I suppose that, you know, harm could be done by these. I mean, imagine we're on a FaceTime call at the moment. Imagine if an alert popped up in the middle of this, we couldn't continue. So you can disable it, but the government are asking people not to disable it. But yes, you can opt out. You can go into the settings on your phone and disable emergency messages. So, you know, that's a possibility. But I don't think most people would be wise to do that unless they had a really good reason for it.
Okay, that's fine. As long as I can continue to use the phone just by...
Yeah,
it's always good questions.
I don't think you need to worry, though. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Steve. Another Steve here in East Finchley says, "I'm blind. Will this new system work with an accessibility program like you get on an iPhone?"
It should do, because on iPhones and in fact on Android phones, you can set up the accessibility options to read whatever appears on the screen. So when the pop-up comes, it should, of course, we'll have to see in practice, but yes, anything that pops up on the screen, including the text of the warning, should be read out to you in the way that any other pop-up message would be read to you if you've got your accessibility settings set to do that.
Also, would this alarm be, this is a text coming in, would this alarm be the new way of giving the four-minute warning if there's a threat?
Yeah, I'm not sure we'll get 4 minutes these days, but yes.
No, unfortunately not.
If you've got a submarine off your coast, you're not going to get 4 minutes. I imagine it is, yeah. Then obviously they're not saying that, and they're saying extreme weather and then eventually, you know, terrorist alerts. But obviously, you know, that would be one use for it, and we'd hope we'd never see that. I mean, the majority of people after Sunday will probably go months or years before they see this message again, if ever. But you know, we do get severe weather warnings. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. But, you know, I've got a smart speaker and it pops up with severe weather warnings from time to time. We had one the other day for snow, you know. And you go in and you check, is it real? Do I need to, you know, take note of this? I think it's a good thing, as long as it isn't abused and as long as it's done securely.
A junior has texted in saying, "Hi Clive, America has been sending amber warnings for years. Whenever there's someone missing or something's happening in an area, you don't need to be connected on any American network as a tourist, etc. Everyone just receives the message. This proves that we are 20 years behind the rest of the world."
Yeah, I mean, this is established already in many countries, including America, Canada, Japan, the Netherlands, but it's interesting because there's a choice about what they're going to do with it. You know, missing child, are you going to trigger it for a missing child? Are you going to trigger it for things other than...
Could they do it locally for particular areas?
You could do. I mean, they've said it can be as local as a electoral ward in an election. So if you think about, you know, a borough might have many wards in it. So you could target a few thousand people.
Chris is a bit suspicious, says, "Is this alert just a way for them, Big Brother, to install spyware on our phones?"
No, I mean, they already have that, so you don't have to worry that this is a new way of doing it. They can already do that. Think of this more like your phone being like a radio receiver and the cell towers broadcasting to anything that's within range. So your phone, which is why you don't need an app and they don't need to know your number, and you don't have to have geolocation switched on. The fact that you are in the broadcast area should mean that you receive the message. It's much more like, think of it much more like conventional radio.
Clive, when the government mobile alert blocks use of the phone, would it block emergency calls, says Kath?
I don't think it would. I think all it would mean is that you can't. And, you know, I don't want to overstate this. It really should be just a matter of tapping OK, I've seen it, carrying on. Mm. You're free to ignore it. It's just that we already have certain types of pop-ups, depending on your settings, that you need to acknowledge before they disappear off the screen. Others, you know, slide off the screen after a few seconds. It depends on, you know, for those messages, it depends on your settings. But this is just something, excuse me, designed to make sure that you don't inadvertently miss it, that you don't skip past it inadvertently. But you can certainly skip past it deliberately. You can completely ignore it, and you can, you know, you can do what you like. The government can't control you with these messages. They might instill fear, but hopefully they'll use it responsibly.
Interesting. This is clearly capturing the public imagination, because we've had a lot of questions coming in on it. I think we've answered most of them. There's one more comment here. Clive, did you see the drama years and years ago? Oh, sorry, years and years on the BBC. I didn't see it, but I heard it was very good. Did you see that one, Fevzy?
No.
Years and
no.
Years? Well, I think it was a very futuristic thing. Anyway, a missile flies over the UK and alarm sounds in the street, but it is ignored because no one knows what it means. Yeah. Is this what the new phone alarm is based on, this drama?
Yeah, I mean, you know, people in certain cities like London and New York have a propensity to think they know better and ignore everything that they're told. So, you know, that's fine. You know, people can do that. But yes, it can be the modern equivalent of the air raid warning, yeah, can't it?
But people too. I mean, like burglar alarms go off all the time, car alarms. Everybody just ignores them.
Yeah. Hopefully, though, you won't get to see many of these.
No.
You know, so it will, you know, it will stand out. And,
except on, what is it, April the 23rd?
Sunday the 23rd of April, yeah, sometime in the early evening.
Early evening. So so Rachel Johnson could be doing her programme on a Sunday evening, and her phone, even if it's put on silent, it'll go off in the middle of the programme.
Yeah, she'd have to switch it off.
Yeah. What happens, Nick has texted to say, what happens if the alert comes through whilst you're driving?
If you're using the phone as a sat nav, for example, you probably lose the visuals at the very, very minimum. You'll cease to see the map. It does say, you know, you should read it if it's safe to do so. So, you know, when you're driving, you're not meant to touch the screen of your phone, of course. So, strictly speaking, I think you would see it on the screen. You would pull over at a safe location, you would read it and acknowledge like a good citizen and go about your business, I suppose.
We've got a listener in Texas. Good morning to you. It says, I'm in Texas and I just got an Amber Alert about a missing person.
Yeah. So the UK government haven't said they're going to use it in that way, but that would be potentially an obvious extension of the remit. So they've said severe weather to start with, then possibly terrorist alerts, but I think things like that, you know, certainly could be used in that way. And other forms of, you know, there's all manners of emergencies they could use it for. I suppose that the decision is not to overuse it, because the more you use it, the less people will act upon it, I suspect, if something were to trigger on a semi-regular
basis. I remember
basis.
Driving through, I think it was Carolina, and there was a twister warning. And it really was getting very, very scary and windy, to say the least. And I was out on the road, and all of the radio stations were interrupted, not by the presenter, but by some kind of announcement that just interrupted all radio broadcasting to say, warning, warning, stop driving, you know, take care, and this is coming.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's built into sort of conventional in-car FM radios as well. You know, you can have it where you can be listening to one station, then the news from another station drops in if you set it up like that. You know, the ability to interrupt broadcasts is not a new feature. But the fact that it pops up, it's a visual thing. It makes your phone buzz. It makes an alert that sounds for about 10 seconds. And then, as I say, to clear the screen, you have to tap it to acknowledge that you've seen it.
And When we say what could possibly go wrong, Nick has found something here. On the morning of Saturday, January the 13th, 2018, a ballistic missile alert was accidentally issued via the emergency alert system and wireless emergency alert system over television, radio and cell phones in the US state of Hawaii. The alert stated that there was an incoming ballistic missile threat inbound to Hawaii and advised residents to seek shelter before it concluded, this is not a drill. Yikes. Yeah. Okay, well, let's hope that doesn't happen.
It was a complete mistake. Well, yes.
Terrifying.
You can, especially in America, you can imagine the lawsuits, all the cardiac arrests that a message like that could have caused.
Yeah.
You know, people will be suing left, right and centre for distress.
Let's take a question from John in Brighton. Hello, John.
Hello, Clive.
Hi.
And Fevzi, yes.
Hello, John.
Fevzi, yeah, I wanted to ask a question about how can I get better hotspot data to my... from my mobile phone to my computer. So I'm using some older phones. I don't know if they're using 3G data, which I think is a bit out of date these days. And, yeah, so have you got any suggestions or do you need to ask something about that?
So in terms of getting... So this is where you want to use your mobile phone's data plan to provide... internet access to another device, such as a desktop
laptop
computer.
I download quite a lot of stuff during the night I'm getting probably about half a megabit per second download, I think I'm getting a bit better speed during the night, which obviously is quite slow generally, but during the day it's sort of going down to about 0.1 megabit per second, which is pretty slow and iffy because the connection sometimes drops out and things like that. So,
can I ask which network you're with, just out of interest?
So I've tried O2 Network and I've tried Libara, which I think is on Vodafone.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's a number of things that can affect the speed of your cellular internet and therefore the ability to share it with your laptop. First of all, it depends on who you're with. So if you're with one of the primary contract networks as opposed to the virtual networks, so you get, for example, virtual networks that may use O2's infrastructure, but they don't get the same priority. So where there's a lot of people trying to use it, a lot of those virtual networks are lower on the pecking order. So, you know, not singling out the borough, but that would be an example of a virtual network. They haven't got their own equipment. They're piggybacking off one of the real ones. So that's one thing. The next thing is, well, what is it that they're offering you under your contract? Are they offering you, you know, 3G, 4G, 5G? And what is available in your area under that network? And to an extent, that's suck it and see. I mean, I had the experience of going with one network for a new contract. I checked the coverage map on the network's website. I checked the coverage map on Ofcom's thing. Both of them said I would get 4 bars of signal. I got zero. I had to hand back the contract. So sometimes you just have to try it. But obviously what you want is something that will support at least 4G and ideally 5G. Then you have to think about your device, the mobile phone or device that you're using. Some of those have got better reception antennas built into them than others. You can also buy devices that are not mobile phones that only act as hotspots. So they look a bit like a little bar of soap, if you can imagine. It's got a SIM card in it, but all it does is it pulls down the internet over the cellular network and it distributes it as a Wi-Fi network. Sometimes those devices will give you better signal and range as well. So it's a number of different factors, but I would experiment. And if you've been with the same network for a long time, I would just consider also trying to get yourself a better deal, because invariably every year when you shop around, you can get more. The other thing is you get more data, because it's all very well having fast data, but if you've got quite a limited amount of data each month, then the faster it goes, the faster it's going to finish as well.
Do you have a suggestion on the bar of soap device? This just the hotspot device you were talking about?
There are so many, and it's hard to say that one will be better than the other for a particular network in your area. But just to say that if you're using, you know, mobile phones, although they have that functionality, sometimes the the sort of bespoke devices will do a better job of it. But I would start by examining your contract, talk to your provider, see what they think that they're offering you, how much data and what speed. And then see
what is that device called then, the hotspot device? Is it got a specific name?
Generically, they're called things like MiFi as opposed to Wi-Fi. But, sort of generic name. Each of them have got a slightly different name. I don't think you can call it a mobile hotspot, you know, something like that. They will go under slightly different names, but you can go on to, you know, Amazon or any other online retailer like that, and you can buy them. The good thing about buying something like that from a retailer with a money back, you know, no questions asked money back guarantee, is that you could use it in the case of Amazon, I think, for up to 30 days, and if it didn't work out, return it. And that would give you. And also, you can often get with different networks, you can often get a sort of SIM card for £1 that will give you a limited amount of data. And that will allow you to try different networks as well to see what's strong in your area. Because a network that gives you good voice calls in an area doesn't necessarily give you good 4G or indeed any 5G. So you have to look at what service you're getting and try and find one that gives you the strongest, data rates for that service.
Older phones that I think really are only going up to 3G. So I think, just getting a newer phone would help as well?
Yeah, because it's quite possible that your contract provides you with 4G and even 5G, but it's stepping down to 3G because you're using an older phone.
Okay.
That would certainly be, a concern. And I'm reminded of one generation of iPhone where when you used to hold the phone, the signal would drop. And Steve Jobs famously said, "You're holding."
I remember that. Yeah,
because the problem with smartphones is that they're sort of they're a Swiss Army knife. Effectively, they just happen to make phone calls as well as a multitude of other things. So in the old days, a mobile phone was this thing with a big aerial like a finger sticking out of it. And it was doing one job, but it was doing reasonably well. Now, on smartphones, the antenna often are along the perimeter, just around the edge of it. And it's not ideal, you know. They often don't have the best radio transceivers built into them or the best antenna. So sometimes it is better to get something that's built for the job. Obviously, check the reviews and make sure it's returnable.
Okay, thank you very much, John. Good question. If you're looking technology at the moment, between now and 3, and Fevzi Turkalp is here, host of the Gadget Detective podcast, and we're answering your questions about any aspect of technology. A few more of the messages coming in as well via our technology, although the tweets aren't coming in at the moment for one reason or another, I'm not sure. B says, what happens if I'm abroad on this 23rd of April? I presume you wouldn't get it if you're abroad.
No, the whole thing is it's based on where you are, because that's the whole point. They have the ability, I mean, they could send it nationwide, and in fact, I think with the tests, they're going to do that. But the whole point is that they can target geographic areas and everyone that's in it who, for example, is at risk of flooding. You shouldn't be worried
if you're
somewhere else.
So a tourist who's in Britain would receive it as well?
Yes.
Right, okay. Clive, I'm very suspicious of this new alert system. I think this is all about geopolitics, e.g. to instill fear of Russia and China, says P. Well, it does slightly make you think that way, doesn't it?
Unless we're going to blame Russia and China for severe weather, I suppose we could.
Well, I don't know. It's just, are we talking severe weather or are we... In my mind, I'm more associating it with other things like terror attacks and so on. My mind immediately went to four-minute warnings and all of that.
Yeah, as did mine. And hopefully none of us will ever see one of those. But if you were in a location that, you know, there's been a bomb threat, you would want a message.
You would want to know.
And you want to know which direction to go in as well, you know, because there's a problem that people often, you know, go the wrong way and actually end up imperiling themselves to a greater extent. So, I just think that there are so many ways that governments and other, you know, non-governmental bodies can scare us. They don't really need this. I see this as a positive. As long as it's implemented and used properly,
yeah.
I think it's a good thing. I know I can be a bit dark about things sometimes, but actually I think this is a good thing. And you know, if you were going to worry about that, you'd switch off your mobile phone and flush it. So there are so many things that can be done to frighten us, and I don't think this is one of them necessarily.
Okay. Julie on Alexa says, Julie in Derby says, regarding the guy with the old 3G mobiles he's using for his computer, the 3G network is due to be decommissioned over the next year. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, well, it's already being switched off in a lot of areas. I mean, I don't know when it will completely die, but it kind of doesn't matter, even if it's not being decommissioned. He shouldn't really be using it, because most likely he's at the minimum getting 4G data, if not 5. But it relies upon him being in an area that, you know, that can pick up 4G, but then the device has to be compatible as well.
Yeah.
And using an old, you know, because these MiFi units, you can pick them up for £50 and so forth. They don't cost you the same as a smartphone. And it also has the benefit then of, it has a separate SIM card. You can buy a data-only SIM card. You don't have to, you know, use the data on your phone that you might need for other things. So I think it's a good way to go. We didn't really get into why he was doing it that way. I mean, most people don't use that sort of thing as their, you know, their main broadband at home. Some do, and in some countries where the wireless is particularly fast, they do, or where the traditional network is particularly poor, they can do it. But generally speaking, it would be something where maybe you were traveling, or as a backup, you know, so when your broadband goes down, you know you're not out of commission. In fact, British Telecom and others send out these MiFi type units when your broadband goes down as something to tide you over until they fix it.
Right. And a quick comment, a positive one from Roger here says, hello, Clive. He's on Alexa as well. We use that emergency phone system here in Australia mainly to warn of bushfires, and it works extremely well. Let's take another call. It's Eve in Bushy Heath in Hertfordshire. Hello, Eve.
Hello.
Hi, what would you like to say?
No, I have two different mobile phones because I'm almost blind, and I find I've got a different system on each. So I've got an iPhone which is connected to O2, and I've got an Android phone with something called Synaptic software on it, but that's with EE. And last week, for some reason, all my emails went on both devices, even though they're on two different networks. And I had about 7,000 emails who were all totally wiped out. And I sent myself one immediately to check what was going on, which came through. And then for about another week, they came through, so another 100 or 200, and then they all went again. So is it down to the... I'm with BT for the emails. My email address is btinternet.com. But why would they go on both, and how can I stop it happening again?
Okay, so... I think you mentioned that you had about 7,000 emails.
Yes,
so that would suggest that the emails were being stored on a central computer server attached to the internet rather than on your device itself, or at least not all of them would have been stored on your device. So issues with the network, be it BT or anything else, shouldn't have affected that. It seems as if where they were stored on the email server, there has been an issue there. Either there's been some form of corruption, or possibly the account could have been hacked and it could have been deleted down. I think it's really, if BT is the provider of that service, it's down to BT to explain to you what's happened and for you to ask them if they can actually recover those emails from any backups that they may keep of their servers. They should be backing them up themselves, because, you know, most people, I think, now use a form of webmail, be it sort of Gmail or whatever. Not everyone is using a email client and downloading it onto a local hard disk. That sort of thing is less common now. We like the convenience of being able to see all our emails from all our devices all of the time. But the problem is, to an extent, we're not in control of that data anymore. It's being held on their computer and you're just attaching to it using your mobile device. So as I say, it's not to do with, you know, the network being bad in your area or BT service being bad in terms of the telecommunications. It's to do with what's happened to those emails stored on that account. And really, the only people that can answer that reliably is, it would appear in this case, to be BT. But I would ask them to retrieve them for you, particularly if it's their fault.
It would be, I would have thought, a fairly good chance that they will be there They're just not on Eve's phones.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah,
well, yes. I mean, but the way that Eve described it suggested to me that it wasn't just that her phones weren't able to communicate with the server, because she said that, you know, for a week that the recent ones were visible, but my understanding was that the older ones were not. So if they were not, it's probably because they've disappeared off the server. But really, once again, it's down to the provider to explain what's happened to your emails.
Okay, good luck, Eve. Thank you very much. More coming up in a moment. It's LBC 246. And we're talking technology at the moment till 3 o'clock. Fevzi Tokalp with me. After three, we're going to go into space and a couple of questions in particular to ask you about. One, your view on whether there could possibly be alien life out there beyond Earth, as a Pentagon official admits that alien probes could be monitoring us, believe it or not. And also, how far should we be going in terms of exploring space? Do you support, for example, the US now going back to the moon? They're going back within a couple of years, and Rolls-Royce is planning to put a nuclear reactor on the moon. So we'll talk about that after 3 o'clock. Couple of things I wanted to ask you about, Fevzi. First of all, a bit more about mobile phones and the fact that I don't know whether this is good. I think it's probably bad in a way that mobiles will soon work on the London Underground.
Yeah, so actually, depending on who you're with, mobiles already work on the London Underground. Virgin Media, and who is also O2, have announced it, but actually they're the last of the four main networks to announce it, and they're rolling it out. It's working, so 4G coverage, not only in the station, but in the tunnel and on the platforms as well. So you'll be able to, you know, stream video and make video calls and annoy people in new and multiple forms. But most networks have already announced this, and it will still take them till the end of next year to roll it out pretty much everywhere. But I don't know. I mean, I suppose it's a good thing.
I think it's probably all right to be browsing and reading instead of reading a paper. You read your phone now. A lot of people do that. Not very good for the paper business, I suppose. What I don't want is what you already get on a lot of overground trains, is people on their phones sitting next to you and calling somebody and saying, I'm on the train.
Yeah,
it's just annoying.
Yeah. Yeah, you'll have correspondence contributing from trains.
Whoa, that would be interesting, wouldn't it? That could be a first.
Someone gets stuck on the train and then you do a live interview to them. And
have you been on the Night Tube recently or ever?
Have I?
Yeah.
Yes, I have.
It's not a pleasant experience. I don't think we want any calls live from the Night Tube.
No. I think the other thing about that is a lot of us have quite expensive devices, you know, and a top-end phone can be over £1,000 now, even £1,500, and it's not always a good idea to be flashing them around, because, you know, people can see you using it on the train and then, you know, follow you off. And, you know, they do say, you know, you shouldn't pull your phone out as soon as you sort of come up from the exit of a station, because you put yourself at risk. And I guess, you know, just from a practical point of view, that if you're pulling out an expensive tablet or expensive smartphone, you're also making yourself a something of a target. But I think that why should the train be anything different? You know, people would just want to use this. People are addicted to their devices. They're designed to be addictive.
Yeah.
And now that sort of one of the last bastions of cold turkey is disappearing.
Yes, the one place where you couldn't be reached. Let's have a quick word with Sue in Wimbledon. Hello, Sue.
Oh, hello, Clive.
Hi, what would you like to say?
I'd like to ask, I have a very, very ancient phone, and I did not charge it for several months. I lost the charger, and then my neighbour's lent me a charger which fits, and I plugged it in for some hours, but it doesn't charge.
Yeah. Okay, so it can be that the battery has died so mobile phones use a type of battery called a lithium ion rechargeable battery, and one of the properties of lithium ion batteries is if you let them go completely dead and leave them like that for a long period of time, sometimes they don't come back to life. And that's a problem because the batteries in these devices are hard. I would just try and maybe use a different charger to see, you know, if you can just borrow a different charger, maybe you'll get lucky. Some chargers do a slightly better job of revitalizing, you know, similarly dead batteries. But it happened to me. I had a very high-tech internet-connected scale, you know, the type you step on and it tells you all about yourself as well as the weather and all of that. And having gone through one of those phases where I didn't really want to weigh myself, I didn't use it for several months. And then when I tried to charge it, it wouldn't take a charge. If I plugged it into a sort of, it, when it was plugged in, it would work, but it wouldn't take any charge. And that was the reason. So you can actually ruin a battery. Similar problem with car batteries, of course, as well, though the technology is different. If you let a car battery go completely flat for a long time, sometimes it can't take a charge anymore, even if the battery was new.
But so, some of these chargers that, I mean, Sue said that they that it fitted, but would it necessarily be the right charger just because the plug fits in the socket?
Not necessarily. I mean, if it's an older phone, then it's unlikely to need a very high current. So if it's, for example, USB-C or micro USB connector, then it will either fit or it won't. Beyond that...
How old was the phone, Sue? Was it a smartphone?
Oh, no. I must have had it about 8 years. And yeah. It's just a very simple thing.
Right, okay.
I would... You see, you can pick up a simple phone for less than £10 now, brand new, with a warranty on it.
And a charger.
Of course, yes. And well, not necessarily a charger, actually. Right. You know, increasingly they come without chargers. You know, it's meant to be an environmental thing. I think it's a cost-saving thing. But, of course, the problem, Sue, I don't know if you had data on it, like all your contacts programmed into your older phone, in which case, you know, it might be worth...
You just made calls, did you?
Yeah, that's right. And if I, in an emergency, or if I was out somewhere and I needed to make a call.
Yeah. You can often buy, you know, things like a, you know, Nokia, you know, 100 series phone, and you can often buy them. You spend £15 credit with a network and you get a free phone with it. You know, they're really basic, but...
The best thing for Sue is to buy a new really basic phone.
I would say so. If there isn't data on it that you need to recover, because the thing is, that battery, assuming it's the original battery, if it's 8 or 9 years old, one of those batteries, even if you hadn't left it for, you know, months uncharged, they only have a certain, you know, 200 or 300 recharge cycles before they start degrading anyway. So assuming you've been using it more or less over, you know, a period of years, that battery is most likely on its last legs, even without the problem of not having charged it for a long time.
Time to get a new one, I think, Sue.
I think just buy a new one, £10, £15, £20, you can get great...
Really basic great phones. Not expensive now. Sue, thank you. Quick question.
You can even get smartphones for well under £50 now.
Right.
So, you know, you consider that.
Can you get, says Dan in Fulham, an Android phone that is properly recyclable?
You know... All mobile phones are difficult to recycle. I know Apple make a big deal of having a special robot that gets as much of the sort of rare earth minerals and precious metals out of the phone as possible. But, you know, no recycling process will get everything out of a mobile phone. You won't get, you know, the majority of it will not be recovered. The best way to recycle a device is to either continue to use it or to give it to someone else to use, or what I tend to do with my older handsets is, if I don't know someone who actually wants it, is I'll put it to a specific use, you know, so I'll use it. I won't use it as my general all-purpose phone, but I'll maybe do it to, you know, I'll turn it into a remote control unit, or I'll use it to protect the network with all the other devices on it. You know, there's all sorts of things. Or I could turn it into a gaming device, you know.
Yeah, but you're clever, Fefty. You know how to do these things.
But there are things that you can do. But as I say, the best form of recycling, however you do it, is to continue
to
use
using it.
My phone,
can you do? I've got a whole carrier bag full of old phones.
Most mobile
I don't want to put them in the bin.
No, you should not do that. Most mobile phone retailers, in fact, most electrical retailers, most people don't know this, electrical retailers have a legal responsibility to take goods, even if they didn't sell them to you. Particularly if you're buying something else, you can return your old one and they have to have it recycled for you. So, you know, most responsible larger companies now will have a recycling scheme, and that is the way to do it. You can send phones to Apple, iPhones and so forth, and they will definitely recycle them for you. They won't necessarily give you any money for them. I think, oh, and by the way, the other thing to say is you can sell your old phones on, well-known auction websites, even if they're broken and with cracked screens, because people cannibalize them for parts. So, an iPhone, let's say an iPhone 6 with a, which is obviously, eight years old now, I think, with a smashed screen, you'd probably still see them going for £20 or £30 on eBay.
There you go. Well, there we are. Great advice, as ever. Fevzi, thank you very much indeed for that. Great to talk to you. We'll talk to you again soon. Fevzi Turkel there, editor of GadgetDetective.com and a host of the Gadget Detective podcast.